Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the program. Brian Diaz here with you. Hey, thanks for joining us on the NOLA Drink Show, friends, this week. Always happy to have you here. Yeah, you know that. Got a really good show coming up for you here this time around. We are having what we're going to call a bartender's roundtable. I think we'll be doing a few more of these in the future, although I only have two guests, so I'm not sure what constitutes a roundtable. But two great guests, they can carry the freight, so we'll call it a roundtable, okay? We have Sophie Burton, who is the beverage director for the Mayha Cocktail Bar there at St. Rock Market. That's where we record the show. Special shout out to them, and thanks for their hospitality there. And Sophie's actually the beverage director for the Politan Rogue Group, which has some other properties around the country. So she is their beverage director, but based out of New Orleans. You've heard her on the show before. And then our buddy Jeffrey Wilson, who works over there at Jeff Beach Bum Berry's Latitude 29. And he is also one of the founders and leaders of Turning Tables, the very fine organization that we featured twice on the show, most recently in January. I encourage you to go check out that show. It's a fantastic organization. I've talked about it a lot, but go check them out. TurningTablesNOLA.org is the website there. Jeffrey's been on the bar scene for a number of years around the country and really interesting guy. And Sophie is a very interesting woman, been around the beverage world for a long time herself. And we kind of just talk about different things. We talk about equity in the hospitality industry. We talk about some troubling concepts and trends in customer behavior these days due to the pandemic, probably, and a whole host of other things. So it's just kind of an open forum conversation, and it's very interesting. So I look forward to bringing that to you in just a few minutes. A couple programming notes. Next week's show is going to be a really good one. Good buddy of the show, good buddy of mine, Caroline Rosen, who is the president of Tales of the Cocktail, will be joining us, but from afar this time. Yeah, Caroline's been spending an extended stint down in Mexico, I believe living in Mexico City, if I'm not mistaken. So we're going to catch up with Caroline, find out what she is up to in Mexico, which is really interesting because I haven't had a chance to talk to her since she's been down there. And also we're going to get caught up on everything that's going on with Tales of the Cocktail here in 2021. I believe the plan is to do a virtual event again a little later than normal. As you know, normally it is the world's largest cocktail and bartender conference, trade show, I guess we can call it, in the world. Normally takes place around the third week of July here in New Orleans, unfortunately. You know, COVID. So there you go. And last year they did it virtually. I think it was in September, might have been October. And they're doing the same thing more or less, I think. That's the plan, as far as I know, to do it again in September or so coming up this year. And so I'm sure it'll be really interesting because it was a really cool event last year. I thought they did a great job. I'm sure they learned a lot from that experience last year. And we'll try and do something even better this year. That's my guess. And hopefully back in 2022, down the line, we'll have them right back in New Orleans where they're supposed to be. We'll be doing this in person again in July. Hey, it's looking like it, isn't it? I just had my second vaccination shot today. So normally a little behind the scenes, excuse me, that's probably why I'm a little off here. So apologies for that. A little behind the scenes look here at the NOLA Drink Show, friends. Normally, you know, we tape this show because our featured interview is usually taped on location somewhere. I'm talking to people on Zoom around the country, around the world, whatever the case may be, here out of the home studio. But most of the time I tape the opening segment, this opening segment to the show, the morning of the show when it airs on the radio on Friday. Some of the podcast material gets recorded at the same time. And yeah, but I'm actually doing this the day before. This is Thursday, if you're listening on the radio, Thursday, April 8th, because I just got my second shot. And I don't know what to expect for the next 24 hours. So wanted to get this one in the can and get it over to the station. Really interesting stuff, right, about the behind-the-scenes production of the NOLA Drink Show. Something I am sure that you are that you were dying to learn. So now you know. So you'll hear from me next week how I did, how I fared. If you don't hear from me next week, you know how I did, and I didn't fare well. Okay? One more programming note for you here before we take a break and get to our featured interview. The next show, after we talk to Caroline, is kind of in the works right now. We're going to be bringing Bart Watson back on, and Bart is the chief economist for the Brewers Association. The Brewers Association represents the lion's share of craft breweries in the United States, and they just put out their 2020 annual production report, and that forms the basis of a lot of their annual reporting. And we had Bart on probably about 3-4 months ago. Really interesting guy, great guy, talking about the economics of beer, the economics of craft beer. So Bart's going to be coming back on to talk about the report, some other things, maybe what we've seen so far in 2021 and things like that. So really looking forward to chatting with him again, friends. hey, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Then we're going to be back with our bartenders roundtable over at St. Rock Market with Jeffrey Wilson and Sophie Burton. Come on back.
I was born by the river in a little tent, yeah.
Brought to you by the St. Rock Market, a local food hall featuring 12 unique food and beverage entrepreneurs serving globally inspired meals from barbecue platters to Mediterranean cuisine. Located at 2381 St. Claude Avenue, the St. Rock Market is open every day of the week for breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, and cocktails. We offer online ordering, curbside pickup, and both indoor and patio dining. Learn more at strockmarket.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have you here, as always. Happy to be at one of our favorite spots. As you know, we are here at the St. Rock Market in the St. Rock neighborhood of New Orleans, right off St. Claude Avenue, and kind of doing a bartender's roundtable thing here on the show today, and happy to be joined by two of my friends, Jeffrey Wilson. Jeffrey, how are you, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Yeah, it was really weird trying to talk right then and there, because I was like, wow, you just put me on the spot.
Yeah. We've been kind of drinking and shooting. This is how this show works, man. You know that. You've been on one. This is your second time on. So yes. It's only going to get worse for you as this continues. And Sophie Burton. Sophie, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing really good. And you are the beverage director for not only the St. Rock Market, but the rest of the establishment.
Yes, but the Palatin Group as well. Yeah,
awesome. So very cool. And we our third friend, Steve Yamada, was going to join us, but he either lost by pinfall or submission. I can't remember.
He lost by pinfall.
Was it pinfall?
It was pinfall.
Okay,
yeah. Loser leaves thank town. You. So, yeah.
Yeah, right. I did see a picture of him laying on the sidewalk. So that,
no, that was me.
Oh, that was
me.
You. Oh, okay,
so
that was him.
Okay. It's a WrestleMania shot. A WrestleMania shot. So basically, these days, when you watch wrestling and it's WrestleMania, whenever somebody does something, they have to point to the sign.
Yeah.
So that's what we did for Latitude. I've been pointing at the sign while I was on the ground because he's my manager.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Got it. I didn't have the case. I only looked very quickly. So Steve was at, okay, but he lost by pinfall this time because he's actually not here.
Yeah, I took him out.
You took him out. I think, let's call it a submission because he didn't actually show up. Is that cool?
I took him out.
Okay.
Just took him out.
Yeah, fair enough.
Doesn't matter. He's not here.
He's not here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully he's on a little bit on the mend and feeling better. And Jeffrey, you're at Latitude 29 also, which is when people are hearing this. So this is when you're hearing this, Latitude 29 will have opened back up. So we're going to be kind of going retro here with the past a little bit. I'm COVID time warping right now, and I really don't understand any of it and how it actually works. But well, let's start here, Jeffrey. You were on a few weeks back when we did the show on Turning Tables, which you are a part of, mentor and leader in that program, and I'll just tell people to go reference that. And we touched on your background a little bit, but like me, we were talking about this. We're old, and a recall is hard. So what of your background can you recall that you want to share with us?
I started bartending in college, actually. I lived literally on Main Street in Glassboro, New Jersey, and not even a block down was one of the bars.
Is that where you grew up? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in North Jersey, actually, a little town called Randolph.
Okay.
But I went to Glassboro State.
Gotcha.
With a degree in communications that I've never, ever... Well, no, I ran a record
label. You're communicating right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
look
sure. at you.
Which I've never really used. So I started over there as a DJ, and we already had in the house that I was living in, we already had a bar in our house with actually a working tap system. So I already knew how to pour beer. So I started doing that, and then most of my life has been retail. So liquor stores. I worked in a bar in New Brunswick in the early 90s, and then when I moved to Chicago, the first bar I worked at was a place called Sweet Alice, a very heroin chic bar on Damon Avenue, and that became 1056.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, because I was a beer geek, I started working at a place called Delilah's, and then they shuttled me over to Sheffield's, which was near Wrigley Field. I got fired from there. And I was working at the Map Room for a while, which was a great, great, great beer bar. A perfect example of a neighborhood pub, actually.
Go on.
And that was a great job. And then I was running a record label for a while and doing odd jobs in between, trying to get out of bartending. So I'd take door gigs here and there or bar backing gigs or whatever. And then I got back into it when I worked for a place called The Underbar, which was a 4 o'clock bar on Western Avenue. But they had what most 4 o'clock bars, except for what was the place downtown that had a really good beer selection that was a 4 o'clock bar?
We're asking Sophie this question.
Yeah, I'm asking Sophie.
And this is something.
I don't remember.
Okay.
Well, Sophie and I just found out that we know the same people.
Yeah.
I actually left Chicago
a year before she did,
before she came. So, but there was a great 4 o'clock bar that was downtown that you can get, like, if you're drinking good beer, you go to a 4 o'clock bar and still keep drinking good beer.
Like downtown, like the loop?
Like downtown.
Is it Miller's?
No, it wasn't Miller's. It was a long building that had a little backyard in the back, and I can't remember the name of it at all.
Oh, God.
You know,
it was something
street. If we come up with it during the break,
Continental also had a backyard, but nobody knows that.
Yeah. But so, and then I started, and then after a while, I worked for a friend of mine where we were doing, like, classic cocktails, but we were doing classic cocktails out of, I don't even know what books we were doing, because we were basically doing, like, Midwestern old fashioned, so soda water added, and grasshoppers and stuff like that. And then I got a job at the Violet Hour, and that's where, like, the passion sort of took off again.
What prompted you to move to Illinois? Out of curiosity, go from Jersey to Illinois.
I had two friends who left and were just like, you're just in New Jersey doing nothing, and I was just managing a liquor store and no real aspirations at all.
Okay.
So they're like, you just need to change the pace. I'm like, okay, I'll just, you know, come out and visit. And the impetus, everywhere in Illinois had Guinness on tap.
Okay.
Right. 95. Yeah. Everywhere had Guinness on tap. I love Guinness. I do.
It's great.
Totally love Guinness.
Sure, absolutely.
So, and to have it on tap, yeah, okay, I'll move out of here. No problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Sophie, and we've gotten a bit of your background from, and we'll come back to Jeffrey too, because I mean, the whole idea here is we want to share. Both of you have incredibly extensive backgrounds in the bar and cocktail world, and all this. So this is kind of the point of the question. But in your case, what about you?
I knew that I wanted to spend a significant amount of time in bars by the time I was 10 years old.
Oh wow!
The first time I went to a tavern was like a mountain tavern in New Mexico on the way back from a camping trip, and I saw old grizzly dude sitting at a bar, and I was like, yep, that's my people, that's what I want to do. Like, I was in fifth grade pretending to be a diner waitress because I thought that was glamour, like, and I've literally always wanted to be in bars, so that's kind of how it started. My first, I think, job where I got to serve alcohol, I was like 18, working at some pizzeria in Seattle where I lived for only a couple years, and then by the time I got to Chicago, I worked some embarrassing jobs that I'm not gonna say, but eventually got a job cocktailing at a 4 a.m. bar called the Owl, which had formerly been I helped. And then through that I met these two great women, Claire Lierla and Gina Rizzo. Claire, you know, and Gina was working at Big Star, and she was like, "Oh, hey, Big Star is hiring. You should come take a look." And then I got hired on as seasonal help at Big Star and never left. And until Doves opened, and then I helped open Doves with our mutual friends Ben Fathman and Cortland
Green. Supreme Court.
Yeah, the one, the only.
Shout out.
We're going to hashtag Chicago on this show.
Yeah, 100%.
Sure. So, Wolf, go ahead, keep going.
Yeah, and then from there, and from, you know, having just like really remarkable experiences and like mentors and people pouring into me there, I kind of grew into and around doing stuff in Chicago, got a brand ambassador job for a rum company, but had also been visiting New Orleans quite a bit and decided that I wanted to be here. So I made the jump to move down here and been here for coming up on 6 years now.
Right. Jeffrey, what made you move to New Orleans?
I left Chicago in 2008 because of my ex. She was disabled and we were living in Pittsburgh, and I was the second bartender to work at a place called Embry with Freddie Sarkis.
Mm-hmm.
So, she was like, well, I've been here, you know, most of my life, but when I was younger and I was walking, I lived in New Orleans. Do you want to go? And I went, well, I drove cross country in like 93 from Jersey to Tijuana for a family reunion. And we came here And all we did was spend time in the quarter, me and my cousin, and just drank green stuff all the time.
Right.
It was kind of stupid. And I was like, yeah, okay, let's give it a try. And also because, at the time, at the Violet Hour, Toby Maloney made me watch Chris McMillan's videos. Because he did the post-Katrina, those post-Katrina videos, and right. that was like, I think I can do this kind of stuff. So when I came down here, you know, we actually came to visit, and then I went to the museum, and I met Murph.
The Museum of the American Cocktail?
Yeah, the old Museum of the American Cocktail.
Yeah, right.
And I met Murph.
Murph Reeves, yeah.
And we stayed. We just stayed.
Okay.
So we lived in the 7th Ward in a weekly place for a little while before we got a place behind Tonique, and that was my first job was Tonique.
Yeah, right.
Oh, you're a Tonique alum, too?
Yeah, I'm a Tonique.
As am I.
As a Sophie, yeah.
Yeah, I got, my first two real jobs happened at the same time. I opened Ace, and I worked at Tonique.
Who was your manager?
At Tonique.
At Tonique.
Mark.
Oh, mine was Wilshire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. So this is, I'm sorry, for certain listeners, this is reading like a James Joyce novel where we're just dropping names. We have no idea who the hell we're talking about. But that's awesome. I didn't realize that you guys overlap that much. And I don't know that you and I met when you were at Tonique.
No, because I honestly made some noise.
Okay.
But I had to take care of somebody. So I wasn't making a lot of noise.
Fair enough.
Not making a lot. I'm single, so I'm making a lot of noise now.
Right.
No,
on.
Because of the fact that I have the time to do this. Because, I mean, yes, I have to take care of myself. But this being a caregiver was a 24/7 job.
Absolutely. Sure.
At the time, when I worked at Lowe, we had a camera installed. And I would have an app on my phone just to make sure that she was okay.
That she was okay. Yeah. You were at the Hotel Lowe,
yeah.
The Lowe of Art.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So cool. That kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
So the people when I worked at the Polo Lounge, the management there was so great. You know, we're just like, if there's an emergency and you gotta go, and they made sure that they knew that they were taking care of me, and that was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's great. When for both of you, we got to take a break in about 3 minutes, guys. But so you guys kind of came in from different angles and in different space. Like coming in from beer and doing service and stuff. Mm-hmm. When did kind of, and I hate using hackneyed expressions, but when did the craft cocktail thing kind of click for you both? Like, why did you want to elevate your cocktail game at a
for
certain
me
point?
It was Big Star.
Okay.
And seeing a place that, you know, had great like punk music, great country music, two things I really love, you know, has like tequila and bourbon, but like the fact that like it all seemed so cool and so fun and so low key, but under the surface everything was very serious and very studious. I don't know. It hit me the right way where I was like, you can be dedicated and you can really, really, you know, care about what you're making and what you're putting out there. And it also doesn't have to be financially exclusionary because, you know, one of the founding principles of Big Star at the time was you could get two tacos, you know, a pony and a shot of good bourbon whiskey for $10.
Nice.
And like that always struck a chord with me as something that was right and proper, you know, especially in a gentrifying Wicker Park, you know, across the street from Violet Hour, which is an amazing place. It's still like you can get quality, it can be affordable, and you can be available to people who might not normally encounter it. And that definitely pricked my interest.
Okay. Pretty, gotcha. Yeah, what about you, Jeffrey?
I think I had a plateau somewhere where I was doing things wrong, shaking Manhattans and over-shaking martinis. And then reading these books and getting into this one place, which is called Ouija's Lounge, and making sort of right stuff. But I'm going to toot my own horn here. I won Best Bartender in the Reader in 2008.
Hey.
Oh, nice.
I'll show you the picture.
Yeah, we can see the picture.
So, and then I got...
It's actually pinned to your shirt right now.
I'm actually wearing a Reader Best Bartender shirt right now with a hat and my mask. So, yeah, those were the things. And it was just like this whole new world because, I mean, I worked at Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at Berlin for a couple of summers while working at a...
An iconic.
Yeah, an iconic place. Gay bar. I mean, I pretty much did everything. Sports bars, gay bars, beer bars, black-owned bars. I've done it. So I guess cocktails was like my next thing to do. And
okay.
It was the one that actually, like, okay, I can do this for a living.
And that clicked in Chicago for you?
Yeah, that clicked in Chicago.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. So let's do this, y'all. Let's take a little break now since we're at a little... stopping point, and this is all very interesting. And we're going to reminisce. Well, you guys are going to explain things to me about Chicago here when we take a break, because I don't know any of these places, really, other than some by reputation and name only. But friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're chatting with Jeffrey Wilson and Sophie Burton. It's a bartender's roundtable thing, kind of, although we're sitting at a T-shaped table thing. Never mind. It's radio. You don't need to see it. Come on back.
The Mayhaw is the craft cocktail bar located in the historic St. Rock Market. Join us every day for happy hour from 4 to 7 p.m. and weekly specials like Tiki Tuesdays, Whiskey Wednesdays, and Thrifty Thursdays. The Mayhaw offers local craft brews and a robust and ethically sourced wine selection for enjoyment with your meal on the patio or for carryout. The Mayhaw is excited to present Mayhaw Mobile, a cocktail, beer, and wine delivery service. Learn more at strochmarket.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here at the WTSO 990 AM in New Orleans, and I am actually recording. Sophie, please talk about identifying cats for us,
No. I'm just saying there's a lot of things where, you know, you might think something is beautiful and unique because it's yours.
Because it's yours.
But in fact, it looks very similar to other things in the world, and that's kind of like, you know, cats.
It's fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay,
we'll leave it at that.
Because as often, friends, it happens on the show, as we know, is that, and I say this all the time, and I kind of feel guilty, y'all, because I say this all the time, we have all these interesting conversations that go on for like an hour in between segments. Mm-hmm. Don't even remember exactly what the hell we talked about the last segment. I think we were talking about y'all's background.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Background stuff.
And Jeffrey, thank you for bringing it back home, man, because that was cool. We were talking about free jazz and all kinds of other stuff during the break, which was awesome. Let me ask you guys this, because we were talking about something before we started recording the first time, whenever that was, like last year. We're talking about sort of customer interaction stuff, Sophie, and you were saying some really interesting things.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and let me frame this for people, because, you know, hospitality industry, you want to provide good hospitality, and we've kind of, you know, the tone of everything has changed because of the pandemic. So how I think, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but how people relate and train your staff and what they're enabled to do. And then we have a customer base that people are jacked right now. So,
yeah, I would say that, you know, not just during the pandemic, which also brought a lot of like health and safety and equity issues to light, but also like other social events, you know, that are contiguous and ongoing, has also caused, I think, a lot of people to reconsider, you know, how they empower their employees and what they will and won't consider, you know, basic hospitality anymore. Like letting a customer just talk to you any old which way is not hospitality, because I think more and more so, at least I'm hoping, employers and managers are looking about how to be hospitable to their own employees as well. And I think that that's really important. But with that attitude change and then all of these just guests coming out of the house, unpracticed maybe in socializing and also potentially agitated about the election, agitated about the, you know, the pandemic, agitated about the social movements that may or may not be leaving them behind and their ways of thinking behind, we've actually got a high potential for an incredibly aggressive and intolerant customer base butting up against, you know, people who are actually trying to be more progressive in their own bar programs. And we have experienced some of that. And as more and more people get vaccinated, more and more people feel like the pandemic is over, we have mask requirements still. And people are getting more and more aggressive about not wanting to follow them. And so, you know, that is really unfortunate and really uncomfortable, but it is a good opportunity for us to start practicing putting our money where our mouth is as far as extending hospitality to our own employees rather than siding with guests on these kind of things, like not accommodating a guest who refuses to follow the rules that are for health and safety and also for you know, being a person who's social in the world.
Right.
And that is a that's a negotiation that I think a lot of people are going to go through, because I know that the restaurant industry has been going through a lot of quote unquote reckonings, you know, or whatever. Hopefully,
yes.
We're hoping
hopefully,
that they
right,
do.
Right.
And I know that some people really are. And there's going to be an actual clear and present opportunity to test those things that everyone says they're going to do about siding with their employees, you know, I guess combating and interrupting bad behavior from guests to our employees.
Owning your space?
Owning your space, yeah, and standing up for what you believe in and all this stuff, because it's in the moment when someone is screaming at you and treating, you know, one of your employees differently, that, you know, it's time to get to work in real life and not in theory.
Right. And I mean, we know the rubber hits the road in hospitality spaces in
absolutely
a certain way, right? Where, you know, it is a living laboratory of how people interact as humans, I think, at least in this country and in many other places where people, you know, it's where the rubber hits the road. I'll just kind of leave it there. Jeffrey, what do you think?
Can you believe it took a pandemic for bars to actually care about the people that work for them?
Yeah, go figure.
Restaurants to actually care about the people that work for them?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It took a pandemic to do this? No social movement before this. And we've been pointing out things, Black Lives Matter, Me Too, Asian Lives. But it took a pandemic for this sort of change to even be brought up mm-hmm in a general conversation. This is ridiculous.
It is. Now, I'd like you to continue, please, because I think even what Sophie was touching on, too, you would think, like, during this time, right, we would hope that people would do some self-reflection through this part of the process. And so,
did you hear me roll my eyes?
Yes, I did. I heard you roll your eyes. And I mean, I know what I'm saying is silly, in a sense, but this is, to me, like, this idea, I think, of what we're talking about, where it took a pandemic for businesses to realize, hospitality businesses to realize what they need to do for their employees. And then the flip side of that coin should we not all be thinking about how we interact as humans? And that was sort of my point about the hospitality industry being a place where the rubber hits the road. This is where we actually interact, and these are these test cases.
Mm-hmm. How do I do this without, like, sounding like I'm really super angry?
Be angry, man.
All right. Somewhere 25 to 30 years in the business, and now that I'm near, like, being done with it, am I now seeing a change? And I'm mad. I'm just mad. I've met people like Sophie before, and I know that a person like Sophie, who she's in charge of in terms of what she's running, those people are going to be loyal to her because she's taking care of them. They're diamonds in the rough, you know? But making the people who employ people like her or employ people like me go, you know what, I understand what you're doing, and yes, we do need to take care of the people that are working here. It's like pulling teeth. It just is. It's like pulling teeth. We got touted as essential workers, but yet still, during this pandemic, we're still being treated like crap. Like, big time. Even more. Because, again, people are feeling empowered. They've been locked up in their homes. They're vaccinated now, feeling they're super people, you know, that they can do anything that they need to because they've been, quote unquote, they've been cooped up in their homes and coming out here and acting the fool. I mean, that's just basically what it is. So to see these places now are adopting policies and now giving insurance and now giving paid time off and giving people time off to do normal human things instead of constantly killing yourself. And that's also on us too, in terms of mental health, let's face it. I mean, it's
wellness.
On us as
yeah,
well.
Sure. That's a difficult question.
It's really hard to, like, try to put into sound bites because it's sure. So
you're working
drawn out.
And we've talked about this on the show a lot. Yeah. I mean, but, like, you're working when other people are not, you're working mm-hmm. around a drug, all kinds of stuff. I mean, so wellness and that management thereof is a difficult
yes
prospect.
I would also say, though, to the point of, like, offering these kind of things, I think a lot of the conversations got to come to more of the foreground as this pandemic hit. But I know personally for me with, like, certain conversations, they've been ongoing for years. And, you know, so it's, like, always like any movement, right? Like, you want to say, like, it didn't happen overnight. Like, was it Bree Newsom who took the flag down? Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, that was a planned action, and she has been in the activist space for years, you know? So, right. like, but people think it's just, like, one powder keg moment, you know? Same thing as, like, the misperceptions of, like, Miss Rosa Parks, you know? And being like, oh, her feet were just tired. Be like, no, this was a planned action, you know? And, like, oh, sorry. Yeah, and so it's like, and I think a lot of those conversations hopefully have been people working on it for years and finally also seeing some of that fruition. So I do want to also encourage anybody who's maybe not making headway with people yet in that, you know, that are their superiors or, you know, that are their money people or something like that. Keep trying to have the conversation.
Yeah.
And you can slowly chip away at things, you know?
Because I mean, at least if you're still running up against those walls, you still have an arsenal to work from for the next person that you work for.
Okay.
You know, if this person is not giving way, mm-hmm. you know that you have these steps to do to make something in terms of, like, equity, making a safe place to work, making sure that you have insurance, making sure all these things that actually have us living a quote-unquote normal human life, if that's possible, works.
Yeah.
You know, that we're not working 60, 80 hours a week being a manager and stuff like that and being on the call all the time and you're at home and you're just relaxed and somebody didn't show up and you have to go and work and stuff like that. That's, you know, we obsess over things. We obsess over things because of the fact that we hold them dear to us because of the fact that we're always have to do something else when it comes to this job.
Right. You have, and I want to do this, guys. I want to take a break here real quick. Let's do this. Let's take a break, and then we're going to come right back in. Friends, take a little break here on the Dole Drink Show. Come on back.
Dad's been shucking dozens since 42. Iron tub ice down full of Falstaff brew. Black head of son, Bobby Charles Cole Blue. Catholic church bells tolled.
Brought to you by the St. Rock Market, a local food hall featuring 12 unique food and beverage entrepreneurs serving globally inspired meals from barbecue platters to Mediterranean cuisine. Located at 2381 St. Claude Avenue, the St. Rock Market is open every day of the week for breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, and cocktails. We offer online ordering, curbside pickup, and both indoor and patio dining. Learn more at strockmarket.com.
Well, my bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Well, I'm standing on a corner with the bucket in my hand.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. We are chatting with Jeffrey Wilson and Sophie Burton, my friends. We're talking about, you know, interaction in bars and stuff. And let's just pick the conversation right back up where we did. Because, Jeffrey, you were talking about always being on call. When you're providing hospitality, you've got to be, like, on.
You have to be on, yeah. It's an acting job.
It is.
I mean, there's emotionally tiring. There's people, and I shouldn't say it's totally that, because there are people who generally love to do this. I love to do this. I hate people, but I love to do this. I have no clue why.
We all have different moods, right? Sometimes we're not in a great mood, and you still have to present hospitality.
Never in a good mood.
Yeah, 100%. And sometimes your customers and your you know, and your coworkers can, like, help fill your cup, and they can help enrich you. And you get little opportunities, I think, to see beautiful things, right? And get to see creative things, and, like, those are very fulfilling. And then there's also, you know, a million micro interactions that can be soul crushing.
There are things that happen during this in terms of, like, being able to bond with somebody, because a lot of times it's been an us against them mm-hmm. sort of situation where it's us against management or us against other people. We bond because of this and we bond because of this, and there's people out there that you are truly friends with, you know, in this business. It does build good relationships, it really does. Mm-hmm. Those bad ones, though, those are the ones that you remember the most, you know, and it's that sort of minor trauma that's still stuck in your head because of this thing that happened, and you replay it over and over and over and over and over and over again. Right.
I have some trauma bonding in the service industry with people in town too, though. Steve is one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steve and I.
Oh, because you guys did.
Yeah, because we worked together at that place. Yeah, and we did some trauma bonding there too. You know, and I think that those bonds of like us versus them is definitely something that, you know, I think it would be better for everyone if we all figured out how to level that out a little bit, you know.
Okay.
And not us versus, you know, not us versus management, or us versus, you know, employees, but also, or even us versus customers anymore. But like, there's eventually going to have to come a time where people start shifting expectations from guests to, and like the old school hospitality that people are accustomed to receiving is biased in literally every sense of the word. It's classist, it's racist, it's sexist, it's xenophobic, it's transphobic, and that's not actually hospitality. So I think when you talk about like what's that fine line of towing between hospitality and being, you know, and standing your ground, it's like, just like feminism, your hospitality should be intersectional. And
toast over.
Yeah.
Post over. She killed it.
Yeah.
So I have nothing else to say because of that.
Yeah, that was.
I was going to go on a rant, and she just kept going. I was just like, yep.
Spot on.
Yeah, spot on.
Sorry. And I think, you know, we won't get there overnight. And obviously, there's a lot of times that people are going to mess up and do the wrong thing, learn again, mess up and do the wrong thing, and learn again. And, but that's the most hopeful thing for me this year is actually doing the, practicing the hard things, I guess, with guests coming out of the house, feeling an entitlement, feeling like I stayed in my house and I didn't get to go to, you know, 9,000 tailgates because you said this virus was real or whatever. And I, you know, to that, I literally can't wait to put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I look forward to it.
The myth, especially where we live now, the myth of that old school hospitality, if everybody understood what this actually meant, we'd be in a better place. But everything that she mentioned before, in terms of what our old school hospitality actually means, is the things that we're fighting against now.
Yeah. Absolutely. And elaborate on that. I mean, and this is a great point. It's you're working in a space. You are a human being. You are who you are. You're not there to only be there for the sake of someone else.
Because we're treated here as less than. Old school hospitality means that you are a servant. That's exactly what it means.
Right.
So when people come down and say, I want that old school hospitality, because of the fact that they're looking down on the person who's providing them a service. Let's be frank.
I think so as well.
It's real.
I think we also encounter some of that traditional New Orleans experience in Jazz Fest as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of institutions, I think, where we see that. And I think that, mm-hmm. that's a really good point, in that this is not about your opportunity to go out. And I'm going to be very brief with this anecdote, but right after undergraduate, I waited tables at a Chili's. And I used to pull Sunday brunch shift.
Brunch is war.
Brunch was war on Sundays. In the particular place in which I worked, we would get a white church crowd. And it was their one day a week to come out after church, spend money, the five kids, everybody, and kick the server around.
Yeah.
And that's this is not what we're talking about now. This is not where these things need to be. You guys are professionals. You guys are talented people. You're providing hospitality, you're sharing your skill, you're sharing your passion, all of these things. And this is not about somebody coming and saying, you suck, or go get me this. This is about, in my mind, this is about honoring what it is that you do, and I'm appreciating the craft that you're presenting to me. Now, I know it's easier said than done, but that to me is, I mean, that's a conversation I think that we're kind of having here, I mean, or we need to have, where people, it's not your opportunity to go out and go crap on people. It's your opportunity to go out and experience something good and maybe learn something.
Yeah, and like experience like the range of like human capability, you know. I always find that, like, we call it craft cocktails for a reason, right? Like, we're craftsmen. We are caring for things and using high quality things. So like, just the way you might appreciate a beautiful chair, you know, or glass or something like that. We're making things and in an intentional manner. And, you know, and that we feel pretty passionately about it. And so, like, I think shifting focus at all about, like, you know, all labor is worthy labor. All of the things that we contribute to society is also worthy, is also, you know, something that I think we have a responsibility to uphold as well, not only in the craft world, but also just like for the regular person working at the dive bar, you know? If we think Absolutely. It's tough for us, we're already our customers are already self-selecting a little bit,
yeah.
you know?
It's
so
a great
like
point.
The folks who are, you know, working in Bourbon Street or whatever, you know, because that's their job, like, you know, that labor is also worthy labor, and not, you know, just because they're not making something that's like, you know, historic and, you know, all of these things doesn't mean like that, you know, our brethren in that work environment.
Slinging 300 rum and cokes a night is something.
That's absolutely something.
That's still a skill.
Absolutely.
And the can-do attitude that you need to get through that is also important and a learned skill as well.
Absolutely.
You know?
We got about 2 minutes before a minute and a half. Then you guys are sticking around for another Shot with Noel Drinks, a podcast-only segment. So if you tell people where we can come see you at St. Rock Market online,
okay,
and,
so you,
and the space.
Yeah, so you can see us at the Meha. The Meha is a swamp berry, but that's the bar here at the St. Rock Market, the historic St. Rock Market at 2381 St. Claude. You can also order from us to go at curbside pickup or for delivery on Thursdays, and that is shop.themeha.com. And we have a promo code for you that is NOLADRINKS15, and you'll get 15% off if you shop online using the NOLADRINKS15 code.
Sweet, so not charge 15% more. I love to hear
that.
Yeah,
15%.
That's how I
15% off.
Awesome. Yeah. Jeffrey, Latitude 29 and Turning Tables, my friend.
Yes.
So Latitude 29, Jeff Beach, Bunbury's Latitude 29, South Peter Street, something like that, right?
Yep.
TurningTablesNOLA.org.
TurningTablesNOLA.org, yeah.
And go check out that show, friends, that we did a while back because it was awesome. Jeffrey and Sophie are going to stick around for another Shot with Nola Drinks. I think we're going to talk music because that's what we've been talking about during all the breaks. So we're going to do that, have another beverage. Friends, if you're listening on the radio, remember to be kind to one another. As always, use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all. Everybody, have another Shot with Nola Drinks. Thanks for listening in. Friends, always happy to have you here on the program. Hope you are enjoying our conversation here with Jeffrey and Sophie. We are about to bounce back to St. Rock Market to continue our conversation. And right out of the gate, Jeffrey is going to share a special sentiment with all of us. Here we go. Yep, another Shot with Nola Drinks. Jeffrey, please.
Fuck.
There it is.
Fucking A.
There it is. It harkens back to a previous time in a previous show when we talked about turning tables.
Fucking adults, why can't we curse?
Jesus. Yeah, you know, now we can. I don't control the FCC. I don't really control anything.
Nobody knows who controls the fucking show.
So, to be honest with you. Yeah. But as we were chatting all kinds of stuff. In between breaks, we're talking about Charles Barkley. I'll take issue with that later with you, Sophie, because we've taken issue
you
about that.
You can try to take issue with me, but you won't.
Like I said, I hate...
You won't find a happy home.
Charles Barkley hates where I come from, so that's where I stand.
Well, but what explain where you come from, then.
I come from the Bay Area. I grew up near Oakland, and he hates the Bay Area, and that's the way it is.
Has Oakland ever thought about apologizing to Charles?
For what?
No, it's the home of the Black Panthers. They'll never apologize.
I mean, fair enough.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So, and I'm going to say no. I'm going to stand behind my...
I'm just saying, what did Oakland do to Charles?
I don't know.
Yeah,
but I mean,
did you ever ask Oakland?
What's that? Why would I ask Oakland? He just spouts his crap and hates where I come from, and so I take issue.
I'm just saying.
Okay. I mean,
sports beefs.
Yeah. Geez, Charles Barkley. Whatever. What were you? More importantly, what were you going to say right before we started recording?
So we were talking about the idea of speakeasies, right? And this whole like
overwrought imagery.
Yeah, the overwrought imagery, and also the absolute, I think, glorification of a time period where neither one of we guests on your show would have been welcome behind a bar.
Sure.
Most certainly not,
right? Like, some people tout the 1920s and the prohibition of being when women could all of a sudden be liberated, and golly, if it's not 100 years later and we're still waiting.
Yeah.
And you just said golly. Well done.
Right. For the 20s. But
sure.
In the fucking Savoy cocktail book, there is one cocktail, and I don't remember which one it's under, but there's an anecdote that says the American bar at the Savoy was a refuge for escaped prisoners. And that is why they didn't allow ladies into the American bar at the Savoy cocktail, in the Savoy cocktail book, because, to keep the ladies safe. And then it says, though we no longer shelter escaped convicts, we are proud to say we don't accept women still.
Wow.
And that is one of the Bibles of this cocktail movement, of the speakeasy glorification, and of the prohibition glorification, which also, if anybody could even bother to even look at Ken Burns for like a couple minutes, would see that a big reason that people were pushing prohibition was because they were so tired of getting beat the fuck up by their men when they came home from the sheer amount of alcohol that was being consumed.
That's absolutely right.
And so this whole glorification of repeal, this glorification of the speakeasy, and this glorification of the Savoy cocktail book are inherently sexist. And then you want to talk about Embry, let's go.
Fuck David Embry.
Let's go.
I worked at a fucking bar that was actually named after him. Embry was a lawyer who put together a cocktail book, basically. Embry was also a champion of white supremacy, thanks to good old Uncle Wayne Curtis. I had a second printing hardcover, that kind of shit, because of the fact that, he's not a bartender and he speaks to me, and then it's gone now. It's just gone now. Because, like everything, there's always a fault in the things that we believe in, but everybody wants to pave over that. They don't want to talk about it. They never do. They don't want to talk about the rum trade. They don't want to talk... We can talk about Clarin. You want to talk about some shit? We can talk about fucking Clarin right now. They don't want to talk about, if it wasn't for, I'll say this. If it wasn't for camp, which I'd never been to.
Nor have I.
But if it wasn't for camp.
What is camp, please?
Run amok.
Camp Run Amok.
Thank you.
If it wasn't for Camp Run Amok, most of these motherfuckers in Kentucky who've probably only seen black people who work for them in a service position wouldn't see these people who are actually doing some shit right now in the industry.
Right.
So I'll give props to Camp Run Amok for that.
Okay.
What we do as bartenders is we constantly repeat bullshit. Constantly. Elijah Craig. Why do we have a bourbon called Jefferson's when Thomas Jefferson, who is a horrible human being, also hated bourbon? He wanted wine. He had a wine cellar, an extensive wine cellar.
And Madeira as well.
Yeah,
and Madeira as well. Yeah. But yet, we've got a bourbon named after his fucking trifling ass. So, I mean...
there's so many little aspects of that, absolutely. Yeah. But I think the repeating of the lies and the mythologizing is an absolute thing that we could stop at any moment.
We could stop at any moment
with this craft cocktail movement that was, again, built to be full of white men
who are straight
and cisgendered.
Right.
We can go and talk to some of the originators of this, this revival of the cocktail movement, who absolutely loved the 1920s and F. Scott Fitzgerald and yada, 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 and, Zelda was the crazy one, yada, 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 whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, a lot of those fellas, if you talk to them, they will tell you, and I'm not going to name names, but they were like, I wasn't hot enough to work in the clubs making all the money, so I had to do something else, so I went into craft cocktail bartending. So, like, and they're like, there were too many women in the clubs, or there were too many women doing this, so, like, I needed to go figure out and carve out a space. And, like, there are a few different places in New York, if you listen back to old interviews, they talk about how all the hot girls were getting the club jobs in Manhattan, so they needed to make their own space.
So you're talking about like Julie Reiner and people like that? Or are you talking about Julie Reiner?
I'm not talking about her, no.
No, okay.
I'm talking about
some
of the other ones.
Yeah,
you can slap me across the fucking face because I felt like that at a time, too.
Yeah.
Being in Chicago and trying to find something. There was a group that was in Chicago. He had a place on Division. It was first that movie bar when you weren't there. He had a movie bar, and then it turned into something else. But then every time that you wanted a bartending job, he asked for headshots.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I could never get a job there. And yeah, that, I will admit that doing cocktails was kind of my solace because it was me, a bunch of guys, and a woman named Jane Lopez, who's now a som, like a master som.
Right. By the time, and you know, I only followed you by a few years, but by the time I was trying to get into craft cocktails, it was a male-only space.
Yeah.
And so because, like, and this is like a patriarchy sexism thing. It's like sexism hurts men as well. Like, you should have been able to work at these bars, you know, and not have had to have provided a headshot. But, like, literally the only value to the woman who had the job was being hot.
Yeah.
And so now if she's not, like, so you only get to have a job if you're hot, if you're unconventionally hot at that, which means you are look a certain way and are white, right?
Yeah.
So not only are we excluding anybody who's not at that standard, but any woman who isn't that standard is also not getting a job at the cocktail bar. And that's actually the most traditional way to do cocktails is because we weren't even allowed in the bars in the first place. And even here in town, there's an annual tradition of storming a certain place because they are proud to announce that they used to not let women in their establishment.
Right.
And annually, we're going to go ahead and celebrate it. You know?
Like, and the divide of Canal Street, who could drink, you know, below Canal Street and who could drink above Canal Street.
I mean,
The people who I who worked under me or I helped move forward in terms of the cocktail was mostly white women. I could say Pittsburgh, definitely. But when I moved to Arizona, it was a little bit more of a mix, but I wanted more ladies to be doing this as well because actually ladies make better cocktails than dudes do. I'm really sorry, but I mean, it's just from my experience that I've just seen more thought go into it because I'm a three cocktail person and I make three things work. I just do. That's my niche.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of like putting out cocktails that were like full of thought and stuff like that, because I'll just go, man, and I'm done. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, does it taste good? Cool. I'm done. I don't
care. What are your three cocktails, just for the record?
So I kind of patterned myself against this guy named Bobby Gleason. He works for Beam, and he always used to just come to the club that was up above Embry in Pittsburgh was a club. We were the speakeasy downstairs, quote unquote. and he would come in and just work his end of the bar and just make cocktails. Just people just ask him for shit, and he would just make up stuff. And I kind of wanted to be that person to just make up stuff. So if you said, hey, Jeffrey, I've got a Jameson and something else. Can you make something? I'll be like, yeah, I can. And I'll just figure it out. Three or four touches, and we're done. Bob's mm-hmm. your uncle. Mm-hmm. So, but in terms of, you know, I mean, I know about flavor, and I know about this, and I know about what works together. My personality is just like, get the shit out, and it's done. But when we're talking about women in this industry, there's a different sort of thing because of the fact that they have to deal with douchebags, like, just douchebags. So that's right. One.
I right. truly can't tell you how many times as a cocktail waitress and as a server, I have been, like, fully gripped.
And I mean, we're like, not even talking, we're not even talking, we're not even talking
well,
about
at
being
the same
on the
time, floor. I yeah, also right. need right. to know, like, verticals of the antique collection,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah,
Like, I'm like, oh, well, the 2017 differs from the 2016 and the 2015 in this way, where I have highly specialized knowledge, but I'm also trying to keep someone's hand from up my skirt.
Yeah, Jesus.
And I, right. You know what? And I could say that working in a place, I can say that working in the Multnomah Whiskey Library, and there's a person there who's a friend of mine. She came to me one day on a busy Friday night, like, can you talk to these people? Because they don't believe I know about bourbon. I'm like, really? So I said, okay, and I went over there, and I pretty much set them up for failure on myself. And I was like, yeah, I don't know about that for this person to actually come back in and take over. Suck a dick.
Yeah.
So
right.
There is something about this movement, especially now, women and women of color, especially being behind the bar, that is so powerful and so... it makes my shoulders drop. I that's the only way I can describe it, because of the fact that I can go to a bar and there's a woman behind the bar and I'm just like, put my elbow down, put my hand down, and just be like, yeah, make me whatever the fuck. It's going to be dope. And,
right.
And
right.
It's going to be dope.
So
it's going
to
be dope.
And I'm looking forward to where else we can start taking that. And I think especially for, you know, some women, I'm not going to say all women, because there's a lot of problematic, you know, women,
yeah,
and
of course
female identifying people out there. Sure. But I hope that because of this struggle, people remember, and instead of being hard and saying, you know, you have to go through what I go through, right, to be the one, yeah, in this space, the, you know, which is very pick me ass mentality,
yeah,
which is my least favorite type, is there's an each one teach one kind of thing, and like pull people up.
And you know what, I'm gonna be 100 with you. I suffer from that. I was in a fraternity in college where I hazed people.
Yeah.
So I mean, I hazed guys and girls equally. I didn't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. It's like, you want to work behind my bar, you have to go through this shit. So I, you know, I'm getting rid of my old school mentality.
I think you and I both come out of a system that had a lot of old school mentality.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because we have similar backgrounds, you know, and similar people and companies that,
sure,
we've worked for in multiple cities, it turns out, which is pretty,
yeah,
remarkable for us. And I think both of us being like, okay, maybe there's another way to do it. Because, like, I wouldn't say that I was necessarily hazed, but I would say that I had some, you know, I had some things that I was expected to deal with. And to toughen up,
right,
and whatever, that I would literally never put one of my employees
and that's a key term of what you just said, right? You were basically shut down because you were told to toughen up or, mm-hmm, suck it up, or this is the way it's supposed to be.
And I did, and that made me a pick me for a little while, you know? Like, I'm not like other girls. I can deal with this.
Oh, God, that whole...
You know what I'm saying?
You're...
But you know what I'm saying?
Sucks.
It's like,
yeah,
I can handle the way that the guys talk to me. I can handle how mean you are. I can handle how tough you are. And I'm doing this to get ahead. And, like, I really did have that mentality when I was younger. And, you know, I'm not going to fault myself for doing what I needed to do at the time, but it was an anti-feminist rhetoric that I,
sure,
had internalized. And I had internalized that it was okay to treat people like this without absolutely understanding a lick of power dynamic or intersectionality. And now,
right,
you know, there's some unlearning and undoing or whatever, but the best way to do it is to just stop acting like a dick to your employees and stop putting out barriers because someone put a barrier in front of you. It's bullshit and it's pointless.
Yeah. Great point, Sophie.
High five.
Yeah, there you go. Beautiful. Thank you. And Jeffrey, you were saying the same thing about unlearning certain behavior.
Yes, yes. I think when you get to a certain age, at a certain point, everybody tells you, well, that's it, I'm done. I remember...
we were talking about this before. It was a different time.
I, you know, people ask me, like, do you listen to new music? And I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't I? Because, I mean, it's still an ongoing thing. Didn't stop after 85. You know? So, yeah, I do. I check. I always do. And it's not because I want to be down with the kids. It's because I love music. That's why it's always evolving. It's always changing. So
always evolving, always changing.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to die.
Yeah.
We do know that.
But the need to always evolve and always change, to ask yourself questions, ask yourself where you're fucking up, ask yourself where your blind spots are.
Yeah.
And address them.
It's not a hard thing to do.
It's not.
There's
it's
people.
I mean,
it can be. It's not an ignoble thing to do. That's the biggest thing.
It's just like, simply the right fucking thing to do.
Congratulated for it.
It also doesn't reflect poorly,
exactly,
on you if you didn't know something.
Yeah.
Or if the times changed.
You're exactly,
like, I was conditioned in this environment, and now I am in
Thank
a new
you.
Environment. And
yes,
a huge thing about being a human is adaptability. So let's just buck up and adapt, y'all.
Yeah.
Like, come
Sweet.
On.
It's not that fucking
like,
hard.
Learn new things.
It's not that fucking hard. It's really
like
nice.
If you can go down a Wikipedia hole, like you can also treat someone better.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. You're learning new things.
Oh, I love it. You know what? Do you all want to leave it there? Because I'm kind of like, that's just, you guys are fucking straight up with this, and that's, yeah.
I think you should like give us like 3 hours the next time.
Yeah, we'll do. Yeah.
I just want to say thank you for introducing me to Jeffrey, because we're gonna be maybe some pals now.
Yes.
I don't know. I think this is really great. This is cool.
It is my pleasure, and I want to thank you both for spending time here on the program, and it's great to chat with you both. I Sophie, I obviously know you a little better than I knew Jeffrey, but it's
I'm pretty one-dimensional. Pretty fucking one-dimensional.
We like Eric Dolphy.
I literally texted our mutual friend Ben Fassman a picture of me and you, and he said, "Oh my god, that fucking shirt that you're wearing."
All right,
well, he said, "Yo," and he's like, "That fucking shirt."
Yeah, so you'll see this on the gram, because we're gonna get a picture here, and we'll see the shirt. It's the Jefferson Parish Football Club mascot. Friends, thanks for listening into the show. We'll do this again. It's been a pleasure. Plug stuff.
You first.
I work at a bar. It's called Latitude 29. I call it tropical instead of tiki because tiki's racist as fuck.
Hey.
Yes.
I love that place. It is. But I love that place, and I love the people that are there. Steve Yamada, who is supposed to be with us today, is my manager. He's also one of my best friends. He runs a really tight ship. Jeff and Anine are great people.
Absolutely.
I love working.
Yep.
Just turning tables. I came down here because there's not a lot of black people behind the bar. I'm fucking making that a priority.
It is a fantastic organization, friends.
Well,
turning
not
tables,
black
not
people,
old,
just people of
but
color.
People of color.
People
and,
of color.
And I do want everyone, please go listen to the show that we did. We did one about a year and a half ago, and then we did one about 2 months ago.
The dynamic changed.
And the dynamic, what you all have done, I'm sorry, I went editorialized, but what you all have done, seeing it from the first year to seeing it through the second year, is fucking remarkable. And it's in the dynamism from the people, and not that it wasn't great before and the people weren't awesome before, I'm not saying that at all. What you all are addressing and the programmatic aspects of what you're doing is truly remarkable. So shout out to you, Jeffrey.
Out to you.
Shout out to Touré.
And shout out to
everybody else who is involved in that program.
Shout out to Tim, too.
And shout out to Tim, too. Absolutely.
And Turning Tables sent us to a DEI workshop about a year ago, me and my co-manager, Benton. These are all things that we believe, but we needed a better structure of how to talk about it and start introducing it to our broader company. And since that, it has actually grown pretty significantly in the other ways that we talk with people who aren't in our department in this company, and is getting
awesome.
Baked in more and more and more
awesome.
Like into our project in Atlanta. It's like in no small terms part of like our fibers. Turning Tables is like, even if, you know, like we were on the quote-unquote ally train, like it enabled us to be better allies as well.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Sophie, tell people about the Meja on St. Rock Market.
So the Meja is our cocktail bar here at St. Rock. It is a friendly neighborhood craft cocktail bar where we make absolutely everything, including the thing that makes your hurricane purple, but we're fun and we want you here. We do bottled cocktails that already have the liquor in it. We have natural wine. We have local beer. You can order online for pickup or delivery. And on top of that, I work for the Politan Group, who makes food halls across the country, and we are really excited about our opening in Atlanta. We will be in Midtown Atlanta doing a food hall, and also there's another special little thing that we will be debuting there, and I truly cannot wait to subvert the speakeasy.
But not the overwrought version of the speakeasy, right?
Oh, no, no. We're going to have a good time.
Okay, awesome.
And an inclusive time, and I can't wait to get into that and tell people more about it a little later.
We will do so. Jeffrey, Sophie, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. Cool. Friends, brief musical interlude, and I'll be back to close things out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the program. Happy to have had you here as always this time around on the NOLA Drink Show. Great conversation with Jeffrey and Sophie. Very inspiring and informative and fun and all kinds of good laughs in between. Cool to talk to them because they actually knew all kinds of people. You probably gathered this from the conversation in common from their
stints in Chicago. I don't think they quite overlapped, but they knew a lot of folks, worked in a lot of the same circles. And we spent a lot of time talking about free jazz, all kinds of cool stuff, music, all kinds of things throughout the program, during the breaks, all that good stuff. But really important conversation through much of it, and just fun conversation through the rest of it. And I appreciate their time, and thanks to St. Rock Market for hosting us. And yeah, there you go. We're going to be back with a new show coming up in not too long here on the podcast version of the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to be chatting with Caroline Rosen, who is the president of Tales of the Cocktail. And we're going to get a little bit of a sense about what's going on coming up here in 2021. They're doing a hybrid event, meaning that they're going to be doing most of the stuff virtual like they did in 2020, but then supporting folks all around the globe doing actual in-person events where they are permitted, allowed, and safe. So like things in bars, pop-ups, cool stuff going on. And that's going to be in the third week of September. So that'll be really exciting. And then we also talk about looking forward to 2022, when we ideally should be, probably, we'll be doing an in-person event back in New Orleans in July, like it's supposed to be, just like Mother Nature intended it, right? So that's what we got coming up next week. And after that, we're going to be chatting with Bart Watson, our buddy who is the chief economist from the Brewers Association, who represents the lion's share of the craft brewers in the United States, talking a lot about what happened in 2020 and the whole craft beer industry. Bart's a great guest, really insightful guy, very bright guy. They've been putting out some reporting on 2020, and we're going to talk about what they're discovering, and also look forward to, you know, we'll talk about what happened in 2021 in the first quarter, and probably talk about a bit on what to look forward to, or what we're going to prognosticate. He's going to prognosticate, not me. No one wants me doing anything like that because I'm always wrong, but looking forward to what to check out and expect in 2021. So there you go, friends. That's what's coming up on the NOLA Drink Show. Thanks for listening in. Here's to you.